So let's start by coming back to the body. Settling in again into an upright and relaxed body. And this is always the first step when we start to engage in these practices, when we sit down again to engage in this, in working with these methods. We start with finding ourselves a suitable posture and release our awareness into our body. In this way, stabilizing our mind, cultivating this awareness that is at peace, still and clear. As we come into contact again with observing sensations throughout the body. And in this way, fully abiding in the presence with whatever arises. Sometimes it's good after a long day of receiving teachings to begin by taking 3 slow, deep breaths, totally sinking into this peaceful stillness of the present moment. No complication. Just knowing that we are here and aware. And with this settling in a pure motivation, the highest possible intention. It's so important that we think big, that we have a vast vision of what we want to do. In this world, especially today. In this world that is filled with so much narrow-mindedness. This narrow-mindedness getting stronger and stronger every day. So we have to counteract that by making our vision vast and most positive. Developing this bodhisattva attitude. How incredible. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, bodhisattvas think in terms of eons. Whatever it takes, always working for this goal. We should take this as our example and with this inspiration widen our mind, making the basis of our intention vast, including every single sentient being in our practice. And again, come here to create the cause for full enlightenment, to step by step produce full awakening within ourselves. Because your wisdom is so desperately needed in this world right now. It's our responsibility to develop it. Now that we have the chance, these conditions, this intelligence to do so, it would be a great waste otherwise. Not only for ourselves, but especially for the world. A huge loss, a huge waste. For every being, if we don't hurry up and pull ourselves together, and out of this intention we come back to the shamatha object of our own choice. Slowly, gently bringing all your attention to the object that you would like to work with right now, that is most suitable for you. And developing this sharp moment-to-moment awareness. We engage in this silent, single-pointed concentration practice. Without grasping. Without distraction. staying with our object, being fully alive right here. Not looking for anything. It is all there. Not trying to find anything mystical or mysterious. The very fact of being aware of your object is mystical enough. Stabilizing your attention between being highly aware and simultaneously at ease and relaxed. You have space. for a short time, readjusting your position and taking a short break. And then reconnecting for some time before we venture into our analytical part of this meditation, where we are going to investigate a little bit more into this topic of suffering. For a few more moments, coming back to your breath or the object that you choose to work with. Remembering that it's really about training your single-pointedness. Not kind of like being half with your object, half somewhere else, kind of drifting along. But as soon as your concentration vanishes, even just a slight little bit, recognizing this immediately and applying the antidote. If we can do that, then really there will be benefit. Then we really train the muscle of our mindfulness. this meditation now we want to investigate a little deeper into dukkha, or what we call suffering. And in the beginning we can bring to mind the very first powerful statement the Buddha made after he attained enlightenment. The very first thing he taught, that suffering is a truth. This life that we live here, in what is called the desire realm, is pervaded by dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Not only do we have to experience the coarse suffering of bodily and mental pain, as well as the suffering of change, total unreliability. But also we live a life where the potential for suffering is all-pervasive. There is always a potential for suffering there, because our mind is still deluded. That's the situation we find ourselves in. This is the state of our mind. Samsara. Cyclic existence. But the good news is that this very situation, as soon as we recognize it as such, this all-pervasive dukkha, we can begin to work with it, to overcome it. Because suffering is not something permanent. Suffering does not truly exist. We can bring about change. So we want to examine the qualities of dukkha, how the recognition that we suffer helps us, enables us to walk the path, to free ourselves completely through this recognition. And we can simply begin by bringing to mind this verse from the 7-point mind training I want to read out for you. Just as the lotus does not grow out of a beautiful, nicely leveled soil, but from dirty maya, in the same way the awakening mind is not born in the hearts of disciples in whom attachment is absent, It grows instead in the hearts of ordinary beings who possess the full fetters of bondage. So what this means is seeing that without suffering, without the recognition that this is our reality, true renunciation, which leads to enlightenment, would not arise. The wish to renounce suffering once and for all by practicing the path arises because there is suffering. Contemplate on this a little bit. So when it is actually suffering that is a building block for enlightenment, we can work with this thought experiment that in this way, whoever brings us harm, whoever makes us suffer, this very person gives us the opportunity to practice the path. Training in the two awakening minds. And if you wish at this point, you can take some time to bring to mind someone, a particular person who harmed you in your life. And then contemplating, looking at this through the eyes of the Lojong teachings. This means that this person is most kind indeed. This person who brings me suffering is my most precious teacher, showing me exactly my situation, what I have to work on, to overcome suffering. Someone showing us our lack of antidotes, our failure in noticing our own afflictions, giving us this opportunity to overcome them right there and then, giving us the opportunity to see the truth of suffering and grow spiritually. Letting go of being proud, but bringing these conditions onto the path. Yeah, it really dispels our arrogance, thinking we are these great Dharma practitioners, walking around with this big sense of I. We very directly notice exactly what we have to work on. This person bringing us this harm. And not only that, but this person who might not be aware of that, but he or she gives us a direct teaching on karma. That this harm doesn't come about out of the blue, but comes from a cause. A non-virtuous karma we created ourselves in the past, and we now have to experience. We can see right there that if we wish to be free of this kind of suffering, we have to stop creating the cause for it, and instead forsake all negative acts, practicing virtue. So that makes the harmer, the one who harms us most kind, putting enlightenment into our very palms, if we practice correctly. And that's why many teachers say that the person who harms us is even kinder than the Buddha himself. Because in a most direct way, this person gives us the opportunity to create the cause for full enlightenment. Something the Buddha cannot do, but this person can. We have it right in front of us. And not only that, but by understanding karma, we recognize that the person who harms us creates huge amounts of negative karma. The person creates negative causes, which he or she will have to experience in the future, which is very sad. So try to see that not only do we get the precious opportunity to overcome our suffering by practicing virtue and responding in a skillful way, but also we can generate great compassion for the harmer, because the suffering this person creates for him or herself is much bigger than the one we have to experience right now. I know this perspective might seem rather radical and shocking for us, but think about it. Contemplate on that. Work with this perspective. So the very fact that we suffer actually is our fuel for enlightenment. And if we apply these practices from the Lojong teachings with an attitude of bodhicitta, then it is the fuel for enlightenment for others as well. So with the wish to be able to turn things around, in this way, we can dedicate. And may we be able to bring everything we meet to our meditation of mind training, helping us to develop the two bodhicittas, so we may be able to free every sentient being from suffering completely. May this contemplation be a cause for that to happen. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise and grow. And may that which has not yet arisen, already arisen, not diminish, but increase for evermore.